Good morning. Let's go ahead and begin. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is July 20th, 2011. The time is 9:36 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. This meeting was originally noticed to be meeting in the Blue Spruce Conference Room downstairs, and I apologize for the inconvenience. We had some flooding earlier in the week. We determined this morning that we could not use that conference room. It was just not pleasant yet from the water and so forth. So hopefully everyone saw the notice on the door, and we'll try to make this room work. We do, like the Blue Spruce Room, we do have the screen in the room, a bit of a glare on it. I apologize for that. But hopefully this will work out okay. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm chairing the Title Board meeting on behalf of Secretary of State Scott Gessler. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my immediate left is Jason Gallander, Senior Attorney with the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. To my far left is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office, who staffs the title board. Possibly later in the morning, we'll be joined by Maury Kneiser, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the title board. If he's able to make it, he'll be sitting to my far right. Just matters of procedure that I'd like to go over first before we start the agenda. We have one new measure to consider today and one rehearing. For new measures, there's three steps that the title board follows. First, we want to make sure that the title board understands the measure. So we as title board members will ask proponents questions if we have any questions, just to make sure that we understand the measure. That's the first step. The second step is to find out if the title board has jurisdiction to set a title. And that, among other things, we're required to find out if the determine if the measure comprises a single subject. So that's the second step. If the board determines that the measure is a single subject and that we have jurisdiction to set a title, then we'll proceed to work on titles, starting with the staff draft. We have a staff draft for new measures, which is on the table in the back of the room. If anyone wishes to testify, please sign up on the sign-up sheets that are on the table in the back. When you testify, come to the podium. Identify yourself and who you represent. This is a hearing that is broadcast over the Internet. It's recorded. The recordings are archived on the Secretary of State's website. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the initial decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing within 7 days of today. That motion should be filed with the Secretary of State's office. We are not concerned with the merits of any proposal, only with the setting of fair and accurate titles. Do we have anyone? I think I'm ready to start with the agenda. Do we have anyone from the proponents of number 37? Are they present? Oh, good. And have you signed up, sir, yet on the sign-up sheet? Okay, maybe I would like to go ahead and start on that agenda item if you're prepared to come before us and answer questions. And then maybe you could sign up afterwards. But if you would come to the podium and identify yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Mark Olmsted, and I'm proponent for the Amendment 37.
Okay. Thank you. As I indicated, the first step is to see if we understand the measure. So I'd like to find out if the title board members have any questions for Mr. Olmsted.
I think I understand it.
Okay. Well, then, if there are no questions about the measure itself, then let's turn to the second step, which is, does the title board have jurisdiction? And that necessarily requires us to determine whether the measure is a single subject. Mr. Olmstead, what would you describe the single subject of the measure to be?
Legalization of same-sex marriage in Colorado.
I'm sorry, legalization?
Of same-sex marriage in Colorado.
Okay. I'm sure you think it's a single subject, and at this point I need to find out if there's anyone present who wishes to challenge the measure on the basis of single subject or other jurisdictional grounds. Anyone who wishes to object to the measure on those grounds? Seeing none, then I would turn to board discussion and a motion regarding single subject compliance. Seems to me that it is a single subject. And I guess I'll just go ahead and offer a motion then that the board find that number 37 comprises a single subject and that we proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff drafts of the titles. And Ms. Gomez is displaying the staff draft on the screen in the room. Mr. Olmstead, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments, any concerns, suggestions for changes?
I think it's fine.
I think one of the things that I was thinking about suggesting to the board is that we potentially add some language. The staff draft basically summarizes what the new language would say when it's added to the Constitution if voter approved. But I'm wondering if we should say something about the language that is being stricken from the Constitution. And if that makes sense, I would probably offer a suggestion to the board that we add something to that effect towards the at the end of the staff draft that would say something like, and repealing an existing requirement that says that only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Colorado. So the question is, should we have some language that also summarizes the language that's being repealed? Would you have any concern about that? Do you think that's a good idea?
Not necessarily, but I feel like when it states that it's already changing Section 31 of Article 2, doesn't that already reaffirm that it's changing what's already been established?
That's a fair question, although will voters know what Section 31 says?
True.
Currently.
It can be added. I think that's fine.
Okay. Mr. Domenico?
I'm just trying to remember if that's our usual practice. I suppose it could be helpful to some people. Although the two things do seem strike me as mutually exclusive, and so if you're going to be doing, well, and I don't particularly care for the staff drafts language. I think it's a little confusing. But if you're going to be saying that laws pertaining to marriage are the same regardless of whether the people involved are the same or different sex, strikes me that you can't also have a law saying only a man and a woman can be married. So I'm not sure it's necessary, which I think is the same thing Mr. Olmstead said. But I'm also not strongly opposed to it.
Okay. Well, Mr. Olmstead, if you don't have any other comments, I'd like to find out if anybody else in the room would like to comment on the staff draft. Anybody else? Seeing none.
Does that include the board member?
Now for sure it does. It did, but since we don't have anybody else who wishes to testify on number 37, then I'll turn to board discussion. and possible amendments. Mr. Gallander?
And I just have one question for Mr. Olmstead, and it relates to the staff draft has the language, by persons in Colorado. I'm questioning sort of the necessity of that and wondering, is it the intent of the initiative that Colorado also, that this not pertain only to marriages entered into in Colorado, but also requiring recognition of same-sex marriages from other states?
I feel like if it was doing that, that wouldn't be single subject. So I think it's just affirming marriage in Colorado and not recognizing out of state. But if it were to do that, I think the state legislator could address that.
Mr. Domenico?
That was part of the language that I didn't care for in the staff draft. And so I wonder, and I also wonder if maybe if we're going to make changes to this part of the language, if it makes sense to do that first, and then we can see mm-hmm. whether we need to add or whether it makes sense to add the sort of language Mr. Hobbs was talking about. Because I found that language the language about in Colorado a little bit confusing, at least the placement of it in the text. So if others are considering making changes to this part of the language, sort of the affirmative part of what this measure does, maybe we do that and then...
That makes sense.
Move on.
Mr. Domenico, what kind of changes were you thinking
about?
Well,
there were two directions I thought we might go. One was to use our usual construction of concerning and then the single subject and then and in connection therewith language. And if we were to do that, I would suggest using just marriage as the single subject. And so then the beginning of the title would read an amendment to section 31 of Article 2 of the Colorado Constitution concerning marriage, comma, in connection therewith, and then going on. The other way would be to simply change the word concerning here to something like either declaring or requiring, and then explaining what it actually declares or requires. But that's the first decision I think I would want to make. Mm-hmm. And essentially, if we were to go with the first option, saying concerning marriage, then I think I would say in connection therewith, declaring that, and then just quote the entire added language would be the way I would suggest writing it. The measure is very short and simple. I don't know that paraphrasing it helps anybody. It might save a handful of words, but it's not a long sentence anyway. And really, either direction we go, I think I would essentially just quote the language of the measure for the most part.
I think that's an appealing approach. Mr. Olmstead, what's your reaction to that?
I think it's fine because I think it's straightforward, to the point, and doesn't really need to be expanded much.
Okay. Mr. Gallander, do you have any references?
We have, I guess I kind of like the idea of shorter, although we have the language saying we sort of do this the way the General Assembly does, and we've always, you know, done the, however awkward it may be concerning, and then I'm kind of disinclined to add an in connection therewith when it's this short, and we can, even though I gather Mr. Domenico may feel that the concerning a requirement language is just awkward. Or
yeah, I mean, I would be inclined not to include it as well. I mean, it's a simple measure. You'll figure out that it's about marriage. What is sort of pretty clear from what you would be saying anyway. So it would sort of read, if we got rid of that, it would say something like an amendment, et cetera, to the Colorado Constitution, and then maybe declaring that, and then just quote the entire measure. Marriage will have the same requirements and effects regardless of whether the parties are the same or different sex, would be the most straightforward way to go. And the only reason I wouldn't use requiring for my for my verb there is that it's part of the text of the measure. And you'd be saying requiring marriage will have the same requirements, I think would be a little awkward. So that's why I said declaring.
Mr. Gallander, are you saying that's the approach you would prefer, to say declaring?
Well, I guess my question is quoting the measure actually? I mean, it sort of says what it does, but what the measure, the purpose of the measure, I gather, is to give every marriage the same legal status, which isn't really the quote. I don't know that I entirely favor just quoting the measure as the title, as opposed to saying something like maybe concerning a requirement that every marriage have the same legal status, regardless of whether the person's married or of the same or different sexes, or something like that. But I wouldn't say I feel strong about it. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways we could write it and have it sort of be workable.
I guess my concern, well, the two things that I think are in favor of Mr. Domenico's suggestion, I think the words are actually pretty straightforward and simple. I mean, I'm not too concerned about quoting the measure in that regard. Where we deviate from quoting the measure, though, my concern is whether we're interpreting the measure. I think at the review and comment, just looking at the review and comment memo, I think there were perhaps some questions about what requirements and effects might be, and it may be a little safer to just simply use the language of the measure, but I don't know. Mr. Domenico, do you?
Well, that was my concern, was sometimes we sort of have to paraphrase and interpret in the sense of figure out which parts are really material and important, and in order to avoid having a 3-page or 8-page title. But in a case like this, where we're not adding anything by rewriting it, and to the extent we are adding anything, that kind of runs a risk that we're adding something that is not necessarily accurate, I'm inclined to just use the language of the measure itself.
I think I would prefer that. Shall we maybe try an amendment to the version as shown on the screen?
Sure. So then the question then becomes the lead-in, how we get from the language about an amendment to Section 31 to that. And as I said, I'd be somewhat inclined to skip the concerning in connection with. I don't feel strongly about it in this case because it's pretty straightforward. But I would just say, after the word Constitution on line one, so the beginning on line two, I would just say declaring that, and then I would just quote the entire measure, marriage will have the same requirements and effects, regardless of whether the parties are the same or different sex.
And while Ms. Gomez is typing that on the staff draft, I would support that, Mr. Domenico, if you want to go ahead and make that a motion.
So then Ceci could just save herself some trouble deleting, but that's all right.
Yeah. That's just one question.
Mr. Gallander.
The General Assembly has taken the practice in doing referred constitutional amendments of not actually quoting the section, of just saying an amendment to the Colorado Constitution. I don't know to what extent it matters or is helpful or not helpful to follow that practice here, but I just wanted to bring it up as to whether we should need or want to keep the section numbers in.
I'd be happy removing it.
That's a good point. I would, if we're going to add language along the lines Mr. Hobbs suggested, I'd be more inclined to get rid of it. If we're just going to leave it like this, I might want to keep it in there just so people can, if we're not going to tell them what specifically is being changed, in the sense of actually saying what Mr. Hobbs suggested about deleting the current definition, I'd be inclined to leave it in there just to give a little bit of a pointer that something is already in there being changed, not necessarily just added. If we are going to add that language, then I think there's not a necessity to have the section in there.
Well, and I'm probably okay not adding the language about what is being stricken, if that's helpful, based on what I've heard so far. I'm still doubtful that providing a citation is helpful to people, at least in when they're looking at their ballot. You know, they can certainly look at the text of the measure, and many voters will be looking at the blue book, and I think there'll be an explanation there. But I think we've probably more often than not avoided citations. I know we struggle with that all the time with Tabor, because who knows what Article 10 of Section 20 or Section 20 of Article 10 is. But you know, I doubt if we've been perfectly consistent about it either. If we were to add more language, then I think we'd kind of have to say concerning and in connection therewith. So I'm okay with declaring, because again, there's some fair amount of precedent for the title board just simply approaching a very simply worded measure like this by just saying what it does. So, I mean, I can live with it just the way it is. I'm just not sure that Section 31, the reference to Section 31 helps very much. It certainly points people to the fact that there's something already there.
Yeah, I think that's all it really adds, is a hint that you're not necessarily just adding something new, that you're changing something that's already there. I don't feel strongly about it, but my inclination would be to leave it as it is on the board now.
And Mr. Olmstead, are you okay with what we have on the board right now?
I feel like it should be kept there just so it can point to reference that something was already established and that this is what we're changing in case people want to look and see what's being changed.
Okay. So the language, as it now reads, for those who may be listening, an amendment to Section 31 of Article 2 of the Colorado Constitution declaring that marriage will have the same requirements and effects regardless of whether the parties are the same or different sexes, or except the same or different sex, right? That is accurate. Okay. Mr. Domenico's, and I think that's fine. Mr. Domenico, is that your motion?
That's my motion.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And I should have explained, by the way, that any changes that we make to the title in what is now lines 1-5, we'll make those same changes in the title that follows, which is really the same except that it's in the form of a question. Any further amendments to the staff draft? Any further discussion? If not, then is there a motion to adopt the staff drafts as amended?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 37. The time is 9:59 a.m. Thank you, Mr. Olmstead. And if you would sign up on one of the sign-up sheets.
All right,
appreciate
thank you.
It. Thank you. Then let's turn to the next agenda item. This is a petition for rehearing concerning initiatives number 29 through 36. This petition for rehearing was submitted by Douglas Bruce by email. He indicated that he could not be here in person, and Doug Campbell would be here on his behalf. So, Mr. Campbell, I think we should turn to you to present the petition for rehearing. I think, as I indicated to Mr. Bruce, I think there are some questions about whether the title board has the authority to address the petition for rehearing, given that it was submitted more than 7 days after the June 15th hearing. And also, the Mr. Bruce and at least one other person has already filed an appeal in the Colorado Supreme Court. I'm not sure we have jurisdiction. I'm not sure we still have jurisdiction to change the titles. So I'm hoping, Mr. Campbell, that you can address jurisdictional issues as well, and then we'll also hear from anybody else who wishes to comment on the petition for rehearing. So, Mr. Campbell, if you would identify yourself and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. My name is Douglas Campbell. I'm here representing myself and Mr. Douglas Bruce, and I also hope that I can address those things because I have not been involved in this until within the last week, so I don't know that I am immediately familiar with every aspect of this. But with regard to the request for rehearing on this title, the fact that on July 6th there was a decision to change the title wording, it created a new title, and therefore citizens had a right to challenge the July 6th title within the week. I also have an objection to the changes that were made in the title, altering the reference in the text to comparison with alcohol. That's a material and major feature of the initiative, and that feature is now being suppressed and should be restored. The one-week deadline for filing an appeal of a valid title setting does not override the duty to oath of office, which in this case relates to a violation of the Constitution and continues to do so. Tabor 1 provides a multi-year statute of limitations for enforcement actions. The title board does not have jurisdiction to violate the Constitution, and lack of jurisdiction can always be raised before or after a hearing. Tabor does not have a one-week statute of limitations for enforcement actions, and you would be creating a legal mess if an illegal ballot issue is approved by voters in violation of constitutional requirements. Does that sufficiently address the jurisdictional issues?
Well, I could elaborate a bit, but I also want to provide an opportunity for others to comment as well. But it's my recollection that I think you're basically raising two issues. One is compliance with the Tabor form of titles, and the second one is the removal of at the rehearing of language that referred to in a manner similar to alcohol. Is that correct?
I would say that's correct, yes.
And both of those issues were already discussed previously. At the initial title board meeting, Mr. Gallander asked proponents about whether this was a measure enacting a tax that required Tabor compliance, as I recall. And the proponents indicated that this measure does not enact a tax, and in fact, it requires or permits the General Assembly to enact a tax, which in fact then would have to be voter approved in accordance with Tabor. So this was an issue, right or wrong, this was an issue already discussed in the initial meeting.
Just to comment on that, just because the proponents say something doesn't mean that it's so.
Well, I think it's correct that the measures all either require or permit the General Assembly to enact a tax. That's the language of the measure, correct?
From what I've read so far, it seems that's the case, yes.
And likewise, the other issue about comparison with alcohol regulation, again, that was an issue that was discussed, I think, at the initial meeting and certainly at the rehearing. It's still not clear to me why there would be continual rehearings on issues that have already been discussed and resolved. There would be no end to rehearings if someone could always continue to bring motions for rehearing.
Well, I don't know how else you object to a change that was made at a rehearing, except to request another rehearing, which is required by statute, before it goes to the Supreme Court. And this matter may indeed go to the Supreme Court, but it has to have a request for a rehearing first, according to the governing statutes. So that's the purpose of what we're doing. If we can get it done at the rehearing, that's great. If it requires us to go beyond the rehearing to the Supreme Court, then we've met the requirement for going to the Supreme Court.
Well, and I think Mr. Bruce has already filed an appeal to the Supreme Court. Is that correct?
I'm not sure on that issue.
Okay. I mean, I have a copy of it. I assume he has not withdrawn it. I'm just not sure that the board has jurisdiction once the court has jurisdiction. But are there any other, before I turn to others who may want to testify, are there other questions from the title board members of Mr. Campbell?
Not yet.
Okay. So let me see if there's others present who would like to testify on the petition for rehearing. Mr. Ramey, are you going to be commenting on this?
I would, Mr. Chairman, like to comment on it, but I'm wondering if those in support of one of those that are supporting the motion to comment first, or I'd be happy to go down.
That's fine. Maybe we should go ahead and have those that are supporting the petition for rehearing. Anybody in support of the petition for rehearing want to testify at this time? Please come forward and identify yourself.
Kathleen Chipai, and I'm here representing myself today. I listened to the Nine News, your show, and I heard proponent Mason Tvert interviewed last week, and about four questions were asked, and none of the questions were directly related to tax, but the proponent kept saying that tens of millions of dollars in tax revenue would be generated by the passage of this language. He also said $81 million tax revenue dollars would be raised if this was passed, was the estimation by a Harvard professor. So I found that to be a bit confusing. And as far as because to me it sounds like the proponents are marketing that they are going to raise millions, tens of millions, he said, in taxes for the state of Colorado. So that sounds to me like it should be Tabor compliant. As far as the changes, the removal of the like alcohol, I was one of the people that testified to remove it because it is too confusing to the average voter. I am concerned that it is still being marketed as such, but at least it's not in the title. But I have publicly requested fair and honest marketing and campaigning, and I feel like what I hear at these hearings versus what I hear on the news when these people get interviewed or do interviews, I think the last hearing I quoted two other interviews that I had heard, it goes exactly against what's being said in these title board hearings. So that is concerning to me, quite honestly. And I am very upset that I'm hearing Tabor doesn't comply here, but then when I click on Nine News and I can watch the podcast hearing that tens of millions in tax revenue will be raised, and that $81 million at least in tax revenue will be raised when, if this language passes. So I support a rehearing on that. And I did, it was brought up at the first hearing, Tabor, and you guys said it wasn't, didn't need to be Tabor compliant, so that's why I didn't bring it up at the last rehearing. But I'm actually thankful Douglas Bruce stepped in here, and I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Did you submit an appeal to the Supreme Court?
I did not, but one, Corey Donahue did. And so the like alcohol, because I'll be honest, I don't think the title is clear. It should say like regulated by the Department of Revenue or the Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division, which was referenced 9 times in the language. And there is no, the only reference to alcohol to me is showing an ID to be 21 and over. You can't buy as much alcohol as you or you can only buy an ounce of marijuana if this passes, but you can buy the entire liquor store. And really, alcohol, like I said before, is federally legal, and cannabis is federally illegal. So we don't want to mislead the voters and say, like alcohol. And I'm going to stand behind that. And the Supreme Court appeal is to add the Department of Revenue or the Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division to the title so everyone is clear, because that is who will be regulating this.
Thank you. Any other questions of Ms. Chippy? Thank you. Anyone else? Sir, if you'll come forward, identify yourself, please.
Good morning, Board. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Timothy Tipton. I'm with the Rocky Mountain Caregivers Cooperative. I'm also an instructor with the Cannabis Therapy Institute, of which I'm sure you're aware Laura Creho was unable to make this meeting today. She's in Chicago. But, you know, I would like the board to recall it in the first meeting. This was a concern that was definitely brought up by my compadre, Laura Creho, in regards to the Tabor concern and adding that to the language. You know, I think that it was kind of given a cursory examination at that point verbally by the board, and you know, I really, you know, as reiterating with Kathleen Chippy's comments, that I appreciate Douglas Bruce's bringing this back, you know, to the attention. I think it was brought up. I think it's a very important issue. I think the Tabor language all along should be put into this. But, you know, at the time, you know, I was relying on the boards for some direction in that regard. Obviously, it wasn't an issue that was brought up this last meeting, but clearly this filing by Douglas Bruce, I feel, is very valid. And, you know, agree the fact that the marketing campaign that's out there in the public's perception already is of the financial benefits that the state and the taxpayers are going to benefit from. So clearly I just wanted to take a moment to remind the board as well in terms of the history of medical marijuana. You know, it has taken place and regarded as medicine and not taxed from 2000 till about 2009, when the Attorney General's office came through with this, you know, needs to be taxed factor. So clearly, you know, I would like to get that on the record, and we'd appreciate this rehearing on this Tabor issue specifically as well. Thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you, Mr. Tipton. Are there any questions for Mr. Tipton? Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify in favor of the petition for rehearing?
I would like to,
Mr. Campbell,
comment if I could.
Yes, go ahead.
Douglas Campbell again. Although it may be, don't know that it will, but although it may be true that this measure in and of itself does not implement and institute a particular tax, however, the measure does require that a tax be instituted. And so the fair thing to do would be to let the voters know that the measure does require a tax to be implemented in the future by the legislature.
The measure does say that, you know, the title does say that it requires the General Assembly to enact a tax.
Well, what we're saying is that if that is the case, then Tabor requires certain language and format to be part of the ballot title. And the ballot title is not just the part that appears on the ballot. It's wherever the ballot title is required to be, whether that's in a publication, in the blue book, in whatever documentation goes out by either side. The ballot title is the ballot title.
I do have
Mr. Gallander.
For Mr. Campbell. Mr. Campbell, would it be your interpretation of the measures then that of the four of them, there are eight of them and they're all very similar, four of them actually require the General Assembly to enact a tax, that if the Tabor, you know, without knowing exactly the extent or the rate of the tax they'd authorize, that if the Tabor ballot language was included now in this measure and that measure was approved, that when the General Assembly actually enacted a tax later, that that tax could be done without further voter approval?
No, sir, I don't believe that's the case. They both concern taxes, and Tabor requires that tax increases be voted on. Even though this does not perhaps implement such a tax, it requires that the tax be implemented by some other manner in the future. So I believe that it's vital that the voters know not only that the tax is being implemented at some point in the future, but that this measure requires that to be done at some point in the future.
It just as a comment, I mean, it seems to me that it would be, even under Tabor, a somewhat absurd result to require voter approval twice, essentially, for what would end up being a single tax. I mean, it's either it becomes a tax now, or it have a tax now, or you have a tax later. And personally, I will tell you that, you know, my reading of the initiatives is that there would be the voter approval in full compliance with Tabor later, after the General Assembly enacts a tax. The measure requires the General Assembly to enact it, it does not exempt that enactment from Tabor requirements down the road when it actually does so.
Well, my point of view on this is that it opens up a Pandora's box situation where somehow somebody can slip in something by not requiring Tabor compliance in one situation, but requiring it perhaps in some other situation that may or may not happen as a result of what this is happening, and in all the confusion end up with a tax being implemented that doesn't comply with Tabor in any regard. So I would say, from my point of view as a voter, I would rather have to approve something twice than end up with a tax increase that isn't approved at all. So let's err, if we're going to err, on the side of caution by requiring
that information to be published seven times if necessary. What difference does it make whether it's approved twice or not? Let's make sure that we have voter approval and not open up a potential or something in the future to not have voter approval.
If I may point out the other side. One of the purposes of the title board here is to avoid misleading the voters and avoid, you know, voter confusion and fraud. I think there are some voters, particularly with the provisions that would take some of the first $40 million of revenue from any tax implemented and put it to schools, who might support this one of these measures, not so much because they're supporters of non-medical marijuana, but because they're supporters of the money and the tax. And I think it might be misleading to them to put the Tabor language in, and then they assume, oh, there is definitely going to be a tax, and then come back later and say, oh, no, we have to voter approve that tax again when the General Assembly actually enacts it, and maybe that tax never doesn't get approval then and never comes into being.
Does this measure require that the legislature create the facts? If it does, then at the very least, that fact should be made known within the ballot title. However, it's our position that the TABOR requirements are such that the voters are used to looking for this language starting out the ballot title and the capitalization required by TABOR in a measure that involves a requirement that a tax become part of the law or part of the measure. And even though the tax is being created via a different route, point is, it's this measure that requires that route to be taken.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Anybody else who wants to testify in favor of the petition for rehearing? If not, then with respect to those that are opposed to the petition for rehearing, I'd like to start with Mr. Ramey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to give a couple points. I'd like to split my comments into 2 points. I have one, Mr. Chair. I think you identified this at the outset. There seem to be two motions or two grounds for review. One is a TABOR issue, one which I heard first this morning. It isn't any written on that, simply the language that was added to the hearing, or rather the language that was subtracted from the hearing. Our proposal was machine. There are two petitions out there. I have not heard and one by the other. And I think, and I'll put a couple citations in the record if I may. This matter, I think, has been addressed in 1999-2005, which is at 4P3rd, 485, Congress becomes City Council, which basically said once the language was before the court of measure of the title board to this jurisdiction. So I think at this particular point in time, respectfully, this board does not have jurisdiction to really do anything at all. I think the Supreme Court has done whatever it is. Secondly, once that's done, I'm getting a little ahead of the curve, so I think that's really responsible this point. We have two disease and powers of support for the nation. Secondly, with regard to the TABOR issue, if that matter ever were to come back to the actions were to go, that sort of situation has also been addressed as well. And I'll put, again, if I may, two citations in the record. 2000 must just be all of the citations. One of them is 1999-2000 number 219, which is at 999 P. 2nd, 8, which basically states an objector only gets the file one time. Well, that one time playing for motions for the and an objector. And that's it, and that's that restriction brought into the language based upon the strict time after the a second case came up regarding the question of what happened to the change at the initial rehearing. Somebody objected to that change by way of some sort of motion, and the Supreme Court the same year. In 1997, and the gist of the Supreme Court's opinion was if there was a and this material change at the hearing, an objector could object to that at the hearing, but if the objection is one that is unaffected by the hearing, in other words, it applies to if the objection acquitted in the based upon the original language at the with regard to the Tabor issue, that clearly could have been the object of an objection. So Mr. Bruce's measure would be for that jurisdiction to determine its jurisdiction on that basis. Official comment, I don't think that. With regard to the issue about putting back in the language that's taken out in a manner similar to alcohol, I'm not aware of experience that has addressed that. I would suggest that the obvious thing that if the only basis of the objection is that the language that was taken out at the rehearing upon motion for rehearing that specifically requested that be taken out, if the objection is just opposition to that action, that is something that should have been at the rehearing itself. Otherwise, it's not. So again, I would suggest that motion would be for those reasons, and primarily the first one, going back to the first one, I really don't think this board, even if I want, can play around with the language. Two appeals have to amend the reports. They have to run the reports first. Now, I can address also Mr. Campbell's comments and Ms. Chippy's comments with regard to the merits of the paper, which I hesitate to do it, but I don't think I'd rather have the jurisdictional issue addressed first rather than I would be able to do it.
I would prefer that you go ahead and address the merits, whether or not we end up reaching the merits. I'd prefer to go ahead and hear.
We discussed the merits at some length at the initial hearing, but I'll go a little bit further than that. There is a case, Bickle versus Bowler, that had to do, I don't have to say, but I apologize for the words. But this sort of an issue was discussed in a local issue context, not quite on point, but fairly close. A Tabor language to be required, and that was the issue as to whether that language should have been in the local issue. Measure has to at least be sufficiently clear for not imposing the tax, and then most what we would be initiating a change in tax policy might ultimately result in a net increase tax revenue, basically how we agree. There at least has to be clarity that a net increase in revenue will result. At this point, where we have four measures that are permissive and four that are obstructive, there is no way to do that. Certainly, with the permissive measures, we have no way of knowing that we don't do anything that will ultimately result in a measure. With regard to the mandatory measures, frankly, we don't know if they if and when they will act either, notwithstanding the time. Do act, we don't know what level of tax they may impose. They have a range, almost essentially at zero all the way up to
Mr. Ramey, can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
And I'm sorry to do this. We're having a technical problem. We're not broadcasting over the internet. So, I'd like to fix it. So I'd like to take a little bit of a break and get some assistance in the room from our IT department. If we could take a 5 or 10 minute break, I'm hopeful that we can get that fixed fairly quickly. I apologize to everybody, but let's why don't we just plan on a 10 minute break? It's 10:31 right now. Okay. Thank you. Yes, 10 minutes. If you can do it in 10 minutes.
Yes, it's like a commercial.
We're going to go ahead and get started here in a minute.
I would think so.
Are we on? Okay. If we could go ahead and get started, please. Or resume. I apologize for the interruption. We're still not able to broadcast over the internet, but my understanding is we have been recording, and we'll continue to record, and the recording will be posted on the Secretary of State's website. But technical problems that I think are related to flooding that we experienced in this room before, some of the equipment is still kind of touchy. So I do apologize. So, Mr. Ramey, I interrupted you. And I'm not exactly sure where you were, but
I think I remember more or less, Mr. Chair. And as a chair, you get to interrupt me. That works in this forum.
I should have mentioned also the time is 10:45 a.m. So again, my last interruption for a little while.
No, feel free. I think the point that I was making is that at this stage of the game, we have no idea if or what the net increase in tax revenue that would result from a change in tax policy, since this clearly is not an imposition of a tax itself, would be. What's more, I think that the phrase I was about to add is there is even a possibility if the General Assembly followed the suggestion or mandate in one of these measures that it could offset it with another tax adjustment of some sort or another, and there would be no net increase in tax revenue. There's no way that we could know at this point, which was the primary concern of the Supreme Court in the Bickel versus Boulder case, as I recall it, that at this stage of the game, we don't know what's going to happen. In addition to Mr. Gallander's point that we don't want to be in a situation where we're asking the voters to continually revisit a potential tax increase, we don't even know at this stage if there will be a net change in revenue, and if and when a tax increase itself, whether or not offset by another change in revenue, comes along, that would be a tax proposal that would be appropriate for submission under the Tabor language. One more point that I might add is I think the court has made it clear, and I think it's actually explicit or at least implicit in the Tabor language, that if a measure passes that should have had a Tabor title and didn't have a Tabor title, that is open to a post-adoption challenge as an invalid measure, at least in part to the extent that it either changed tax policy or sought to impose a tax. So on that issue, I think on the merits, the discussion at the original hearing was right on point. This is not a Tabor measure, and the direction or suggestion of a tax be imposed is clearly stated in the title as it presently exists. And what's more, if this were presented as a Tabor measure, I would respectfully suggest I can't think of anything that would render this title more misleading, because everything else that this measure has to deal with, such as the regulation and legalization of the use of marijuana, would appear subordinate to a tax measure, which would almost manifestly be misleading in the measure. So those are my comments on the merits. But I do want to go back to the jurisdictional issue, because as much as I wish to advocate what I've just said, and I heard Mr. Campbell, and I'm sure he feels he and I could argue all day about this. I just don't think this board has the jurisdiction to start changing the pieces on the chessboard while these measures are before the Supreme Court. Not only would that likely irritate the court, but I think it's a jurisdictional issue at this point. And after the court acts in some fashion or another, we may or may not be back here with the timeliness issues and perhaps a merits issue. I don't know. But right now it's in their court, and we can't have two bodies, one from the judicial, one from the executive branch, acting on the language of a title inconsistently perhaps and at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Ramey. Are there any questions for Mr. Ramey? I would like to ask one question on the merits.
Sure.
If this measure were subject to Tabor, and so far I'm not convinced it is, but I'm wondering how proponents would, or how the title board would comply with the requirement to state the amount of the tax. And I think all of the measures do have a cap, a 15% cap. In theory, you could do a fiscal estimate based on the assumption that the maximum tax is imposed and that there's not an offsetting tax policy change by the General Assembly that would reduce the amount of revenue. So you could at least state the maximum amount, I assume.
You could say that, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think that would likely be as misleading as anything else because we have no – it's one thing to estimate the tax revenue that a measure is likely to generate. And if you're wrong in your estimate, of course, Tabor has consequences if you estimate low. So that the board and the proponents and the opponents are always sort of operating within that framework. Here, we have absolutely no idea in the world what that could be because we don't control the legislative process. We're not imposing a tax here. We're either directing or mandating the legislature to do it. We have no idea what they're going to do either in terms of the discrete tax that we're discussing, or, and this is more pertinent to a tax policy change, which I think is what Mr. Campbell is really talking about, what we're dealing with here, we have no way of knowing if this would result in a net revenue increase. We just don't know. I mean, we'd be guessing wildly, and the voters would be addressing then a measure that subordinates all the other pieces of the measure to the tax piece in the manner in which the title's presented. And then if they get through that, the ultimate tax could be wholly unrelated to whatever guesswork we've engaged in here while the Supreme Court is simultaneously considering the measures.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey? Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify in opposition to the petition for rehearing? If not, then I'd like to provide Mr. Campbell another opportunity if you want to reply to what you've heard in opposition to the petition for rehearing. I'd give you one last chance if you wanted to provide the board with any additional comments.
Thank you, but no. I've said what I need to say.
Thank you. Then I'll turn to board discussion. Is there any discussion by the board? Mr. Domenico.
I guess just I think I'll start with the merits just to get that out of the way because I'm quite comfortable with what we did on the merits is proper. What Section 4 of Tabor requires is prior voter approval before any new tax. And it's clear to me that there will be before any new tax is imposed by the legislature – in response to this measure, should it pass, there would be voter approval required. I would not defend any effort on the part of the legislature to impose the tax that this under this measure without first getting prior approval. And I don't think anybody's suggested that should this measure pass with the title as it is, that would satisfy Tabor. I think Tabor would require the vote later. I think that is what that complies with Section 4 of Tabor, and so I'm comfortable on the merits. And that in some ways at least psychologically makes the jurisdictional question easier because I also think I agree with Mr. Ramey that we don't seem to have jurisdiction here for either of two reasons. One is that I do think that once the Supreme Court is considering a challenge to the titles, we can't be rewriting them. I think you could imagine ways in which that could become problematic, but I don't think this is one of the cases where it is problematic. So until the Supreme Court decides something, I think the question of the wording of these titles is up to the Supreme Court right now, and it's not for us to decide. And so for that reason, I don't think it's really necessary to address any of the other arguments, although I certainly find them understandable.
I agree with Mr. Domenico. I think on the merits, I think well, I probably have nothing to add. I think the board correctly determined that it was best to remove the language about regulation in a manner similar to alcohol, and I think this measure is not subject to the TABOR requirements because it does not enact a tax. But it, as Mr. Domenico said, that provides a little more comfort to what otherwise might be viewed by some as simply a technical objection, but it's a very real one, and that's the problem with jurisdiction. I've read the cases that Mr. Ramey cited, and I think it's pretty clear that when there's a petition, an appeal before the Supreme Court, the title board does not have jurisdiction. In that number 255 case that Mr. Ramey cited, one of the quotes that I wrote down was this: We agree with the board that once the petitioners had filed their petition for review with this court, the board lost jurisdiction to make substantive changes to the titles in the summary. And Mr. Bruce has filed an appeal with the court. I think the court has jurisdiction and not the title board. As Mr. Domenico pointed out, it could come back to us and then we'll have jurisdiction again. But in the meantime, I don't think we do. And I think probably another case cited by Mr. Ramey as well, the number 219 case, seems to indicate that even if there was not an appeal yet in front of the Supreme Court, there cannot be multiple motions for rehearing. We've already entertained those once, and I think these are issues that could have been or were already addressed by the title board. So I think that's a little less clear, frankly, under the case law, but I think that's probably another jurisdictional obstacle here, that this is an untimely petition for rehearing. So I don't believe that the title board has jurisdiction, and even if it did, I would not be in favor of changing the titles that we set. Mr. Gellender, do you have any comments?
No, just to say that I agree with both of you.
Okay. If there's no other discussion, then I would entertain a motion by the board. I think a motion that I'm thinking about, one motion would be simply that the petition for rehearing be denied on the grounds that the board does not have jurisdiction. A variation of that would be to try to address both the merits and the jurisdictional issue, which would be something like a motion that the board deny the petition for rehearing on the grounds that it does not have jurisdiction, or in the alternative, that the motion for rehearing lacks merit. And I'm leaning towards the second, but I'm wondering what the title board members feel like. I think I saw when I was looking at case law yesterday at least one case where, in fact, the board did adopt a motion like that, where it rejected a petition for rehearing on jurisdictional grounds and in the alternative on the merits as well. But at least it's sufficient to address the jurisdictional issue. And I think it's so clear-cut, I'm not too concerned about the also having to address the merits. Any comment by the board? Mr. Domenico?
If I'm inclined, if we think we don't have jurisdiction, to leave our discussion of the merits as purely a discussion, dicta, if you will, and simply address the jurisdictional question. And I sort of think the proper action would be to dismiss the petition rather than, I don't even know if we have jurisdiction actually to deny it. I don't know. That may be getting a little pedantic, but I'd be inclined to simply dismiss it for want of jurisdiction.
Mr. Kneiser, do you, you know, that's a good point. Maybe it's dismiss versus deny, which implies merits.
You know, we're actually in a quasi-legislative capacity as opposed to a judicial capacity, so I'm not sure there's a particular difference. I don't think one's preferable to the other.
Okay. Certainly, they both would achieve the same result. So I guess I'll make a motion that the board dismiss the petition for rehearing for lack of jurisdiction.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Gellender. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on numbers 29 through 36, and that's our agenda for today. The time is 11 a.m. Thank you all for coming, and thank you for bearing with us with equipment problems and glare and everything else.